Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here, our weekly host of Flying Turns, and with me, of course, the founder of the International Equine Network, Scott Miller. Scott, you got your water wings on? I hear it's raining.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, it's raining down here. It's washing our track out.
Oh, geez, that's not good.
No, it's not. I bet them guys are glad they're up north now, you know.
I was just going to say that. It's the rainy season, and that's a reason for them to leave. Well, they're actually getting to race a little bit more. In fact, just about all the harness racing tracks in North America have been given the green light to return to racing. Just this week, Claybridge Racecourse in Massachusetts, they're going to open July 6th. The Hippodrome 3R in Quebec is going to open on June 24th, next Wednesday. And Yonkers is supposed to be opening up soon, but they've got some conflicts over testing and procedures and making these people jump through hoops. And Joe Ferrato put out a big message saying that, you know, all the other tracks, you know, meet the requirements. Yonkers meets the COVID-19 requirements, but people have to go and get more blood work done and antibodies, and they're just making it almost impossible to race, which is outrageous. The other tracks, Aqueduct, Belmont, they're all open, fanless racing. Then Yonkers should get underway. We understand it was an epicenter for the virus getting spread throughout, but still, that's months ago, and they have all the procedures in place. We just got word today that the state fair in West Virginia, which is a big popular harness racing fair, has been canceled because of the coronavirus.
Oh, man. You know, I was reading this morning about the thoroughbred. It looks like Pennsylvania is getting ready to open up.
Well, exactly. And Harrah's, Philadelphia, Pocono Downs, the Meadows has started racing already. So all the tracks there are going to be able to open. In fact, MGM Northfield Park is allowing fans in the stands starting this weekend. And they've used the time off planning and implementing extensive health and safety measures. When racetrack guests enter, they'll see the changes throughout the facility and physical distancing to ensure safety. I mean, they've gone above the call of duty, and they got permission to have fans come out. So that's real positive news.
Yeah, how are they doing with Governor Wolf?
I haven't heard anything. Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet on his budget proposal. I think because of the coronavirus, things got put on hold, and it's hopefully he's going to drop it and look to find his money from someplace else. People still think they're going to take the horse racing will take a hit, but that it won't be as drastic or draconian as it could be. So, you know, they may lose 15 or 20 million, but it's not like they're losing 150 million in purses. But we don't know yet. They're still, you know, they haven't made any decisions on that.
Have you heard anything about the sales, the Black Book sales?
Nothing as of yet. I mean, that is really far in the distance. And I guess if Pennsylvania is allowed to start opening, I think everything is still moving forward. Sales, there has been no notifications of any changes in the Kentucky or the Harrisburg sales.
Well, you know, like Keeneland on the 23rd of this month, they've got the online digital sale, and that's going to be really interesting. You know,
yeah,
to see
people
what happens
will look at that and see. What I can tell you is that more and more companies or more and more online auction sales companies are being developed. So Eric Cherry had Hongate.com for how many years, 10 years now, 15 years?
Yeah.
Running and strong and million-dollar sales and all the likes. And now Adrian Cirello came out up in Canada with his Hoofbid auction site. And now David Reed and his preferred equine racing is coming out with the online auction. So everybody's going, looking to do it that way. And so technically, if you can't go and examine or see the horse yourself, you can get your vet to come or whatever, and then do the bidding online.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be interesting about the Keeneland sales, is to see, you know, who all's there. And it was interesting, some of the farms that had put horses in. Now, these horses will be horses of racing age. And so I think the reason they did that is to entice somebody to buy one that can take it to the track. You know, you buy it on the 23rd and you can race it on the 25th. You know, that type of
right.
thing. And I think that's going to help. But I do think that this is the wave, you know, that's going to come rolling over the horse industry. Everybody's going to start selling online.
Right.
That's going to cut costs.
Exactly. And it's a savings to the owners, because the cost to do it online is minimal compared to the actual live event. And in theory, when you think of how much it costs to bring all these horses, put them together, the risk of any viruses out there, encephalitis, Nile, West Nile, anything like that, is being avoided, because the horse is primarily, you know, staying on the farm where it's being prepped for sale, or it's racing.
Right.
One or the other. So right. People can find out about it. Some other news. Let me get into some of the harness news here, because of course it's Belmont weekend. We're going to get into that. But the Meadowlands got a minor setback as they were given approval for outdoor trackside dining this weekend, but failed to get the minimum number of reservations required to open this weekend, and thus no spectators for live racing. Now, that being said, Meadowlands is having their baby races this Saturday, and with that, they will allow to have spectators outdoors and they have to practice social distancing. But they are having that, and it starts at 8:30 a.m. Saturday morning. So if you want to get you can just park yourself. Well, you can't park yourself in the Meadowlands. Only you can go there in the morning, and then you have to leave, go home, watch the races at night.
Yeah, and they've got good food there at the Meadowlands too. I'm surprised they didn't get a lot. They didn't get.
Very surprised, but if it's outdoors, and I know the weather forecast is not good, I mean, it's the chance of thunderstorms and. You hate to hear that for the race, but for the Belmont, but even for any of the races, at the East Coast is going to have rain, but we'll have to wait and see. But we do have some racing news. I mean, now that the tracks are back open again, the first Grand Circuit events of the year took place last weekend at Tioga Downs, with two $50,000 legs of the Graduate Series for older trotters. And in the first division, the good three-year-old, coming back now four-year-old, Gimpanzee, with driver Brian Sears for trainer Marcus Meander. Sears and Gimpanzee, they wired the field and set a track record in his first start of the year with a 151-2 triumph. That's amazing that, you know, in your first start, I mean, that's... would be like a Chardonnay or somebody else going in, you know, 147 in their first start. I mean, that's a sensational mile. And that's, you know, now he's four and he's bigger, he's stronger, and he showed it.
Did they have a good handle there? I know they've been betting like crazy.
They've been doing very good at Tioga. They haven't done million-dollar days, but they've done, you know, $500,000, $600,000 days. And I wanted to also put in the other division, though, the other $50,000 stake. a mare beat some of the horses, Grand Swan, also for driver Brian Sears and trainer Marcus Melander. In fact, he's got a mess of those four-year-old trotters. He's really got a super sharp stable this year. And our 2019 Harness Horse of the Year, Chardonnay, is going in the qualifiers today. That was at Harris Chester, and I was waiting to get the official chart for that. But anytime that the Harness Horse of the Year is back racing, we need to follow the progress.
Hey, you know, I tell you what, Steve, I think all these trainers, not only thoroughbreds, but the standardbreds and the show horse, our show horses are doing really, really well that left out of here. And so have our standardbreds and our thoroughbreds. I think these trainers, you know, I think they did the right thing and they knew what they were doing and they kept them right in line.
Oh, no. And I know Jim King Jr. and Tim Cheatrick, I mean, they treat Chardonnay as if she was gold, and they keep her. She's sharp, though, because she got away in fourth place in her qualifier and sat there, but by the three quarters came up on the outside and roared on by, winning by two and three-quarter lengths in 151 flat. So that's
now,
not too bad.
How long have they been up north with that horse, do you think?
Well, the first week of March, it won its first start, a $50,000 open, and she went in 150. That was her first start of the year. So, and that was the first week of March. So she's been off 3.5 months. So I don't know how much of it was thrown in the field or whatever, but obviously she's ready to go in 151 flat. And that's on a 5/8 mile. So that's like a 49, you know, 150 mile at the Meadowlands.
Right. Now, where's the next Breeders' Crown races?
Oh, the Breeders' Crown races are not until end of October.
Okay. So everything will be just...
All the races for Chardonnay and for the top trotters and pacers, the older horse divisions, most of those races are stayed intact. They've either been postponed, some have been canceled, like the $200,000 Prix de Tay, but for the most part, most of those races are going. And that's the graduate series right now is going to feature most of those good horses.
Well, Steve, will they take any of that $200,000 from the races that they canceled? Will they distribute that out through other purses throughout the meet? Or
No. That's a late closer. So they've been making, you know, they had made the first payment on a race like that. There's three payments, right. and then you know, you go into the race. So all the money's been refunded. No, the $200,000 that comes back from the fees, and they all get returned to the owner. So, with the stake being canceled.
Now, how's the television aspect of the harness end of it? Just TVG and Twin Spires, or have they made any deals with any of the networks to broadcast?
No, not that I know of. I mean, betting-wise, yeah, Twin Spires, TVG, Ida Bet. I mean, I would say about 70% of the harness tracks out there are accessible on nearly every wagering platform. And when you're in Canada and you want to bet online, you have to go through HPI. I mean, that's the only thing you can do, and that covers both all breeds. In the entire country. So, I mean, down here we've got, you know, competition and everyone else is, you know, it's not one central wagering location that you can bet
on. Right. Well, one of the things that the thoroughbreds did, and like right now on our website, IENTV.org, I'm watching live racing for Mascot, Royal Ascot.
Right.
And then America's Day at the Races, we have that on. And they've got Belmont and Churchill, and they're really pumping the heck out of the television market, you know. And I think that's what's really helping, you know, with the wagering at Twin Spires and you know, all the different wagering OTBs, because they have access to it now on television. And, you know, if they could do the same thing with the harness, you know, I'm sure it would really, you know, jump it up there for them.
No, it absolutely should. But needless to say, Scott, we got $1 million race this Saturday. $1 million. Now, the first thing is the forecast. I don't know if you had a chance to look it up or see what's going on in the, with New York, but Saturday it looks like thunderstorms and maybe a high of 82. I mean, the temperature seems perfect, but not if it, well, actually, we'll get into the race, but, you know, without fans, there'll be fanless racing. I guess the weather condition really doesn't matter. It's not like they're going to draw any less people or not.
Right, it's right. Well, you know, the thing it is all these three-year-olds, you know, they're just right. It's like a kid going to play high school athletics. He's got pretty much his freshman years gone, and he's starting his sophomore year. And you just don't know how these, you know, horses have come along, you know, where they've been. The training for the distance, you know, they had to just reverse everything, you know, and what they're doing. And let me tell you, this race will spend a lot of these horses.
But they've made a change, and they've made a change. They made it a shorter distance. It's not a mile and a half. It's a mile and an eighth. And do you when did they make this decision?
It had to have been a couple of weeks ago, or they probably knew they were going to do this all along, because a lot of the trainers, you know, were complaining about, you know, when you go to Belmont and you got to run that stretch twice, you know, it makes it tough. And you know, the thing of it is this time of year at Belmont, those horses are going to really be. It's going to be tough on them. It's going to be tough, Steve. And I think that a lot of the trainers skipped over the Belmont, you know, waiting more or less for the Preakness and for the Derby. And I think they're really focusing on the Derby now.
Well, they did get 10 horses. I mean, I guess if they were going a mile and a half, they would probably have maybe 12 or so. I mean, they do have to have 10 going there, and I've been looking at this favorite. I mean, first off, I just think making the race a shorter distance, you know, just doesn't seem right, but they'll have an asterisk on it in the record book, the year of the virus. But this Tis the Law, if it's a fast track, this Tis the Law should crush the field.
Yeah, you know, that is that's Barkley Tag's horse, and he trained Funny Side, and know, I think and Belmont's Barkley's home track, and I think he might be right on top of it with him. It depends on, you know, the first half mile of the race. You know, there's a horse in there called Sol Volante. Patrick Biacone's horse. And this horse is a good, steady horse. And once he gets rolling, you know, he's going. And he's got a nice long stride on him, and he had a couple of good works in the last couple of weeks. And
But he's never gone a mile and an eighth yet.
No, he hasn't. You know, so that's going to be the
I see
test.
Here he won his last start, and he comes into the race, you know, in good shape. But I keep scrolling down to Tis the Law, and I look at that race at Gulfstream Park, a mile and an eighth and 150, and there's actually another horse in the field who who raced a horse that I liked, Tap to Win, the one horse. His last race was at Belmont, was a but it was a mile and a 16th, you know, and he romped by 5 lengths on the front end. I mean, he may very well be the horse that's going to lead somewhat, but there was also another horse that had won also in a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream Park, but he only went in 153. I'm sorry, that was at Aqueduct. Three horse, Max Player. No, he's closed well. You know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, he's good. I like Rosario on him. And that's Linda Rice's horse. And Linda, she knows Belmont. That's her home turf. And she knows how to get them ready. And that horse could really jump up there, you know, and do something with him. But you want me to tell you who the sleeper is, Steve? Post. Todd Pletcher's horse with Ortiz up. Number 9.
You were going for the hometown favorite.
That horse has been quiet all year long. He trained very well this winter. And he's a solid horse. He's like a big kid. He's got a lot of muscle to him. And I think that if Ortiz rides him right, I think that they're going to have something with him, you know. But like you said, that Tiz the Law is going to be tough. You better stay right on top of him the whole trip or you're not going to get anything.
No. I mean, another thing that I want to note to the fans was Max Player actually shows a I'm just going to bring it up here. Shows a strong win in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he won at a mile on a sloppy track at I think that's Parks. You know, he had won a maiden and he romped by over 4 lengths. So
if you can run on the mud at Parks. And when, you know, that's good because when it gets wet at Parks, it is wet. You know, I'm watching Belmont right now and the track, they sealed the outside of the track. And it looks like they've been having some rain up there. And if they get more rain, it's going to be a tough race.
But that makes it a better betting race. And that's what the fans want because – If the odds on the 6-5 morning line favorite is out of contention, is at a disadvantage, we don't know. I mean, this horse could have been born in a rainstorm and doesn't care and goes just as fast, and the race, that'll be it. It won't be a contest. But again, he's a closer, so it'll be interesting. I'm telling you, 5:42 p.m., or was it 6:42 that race goes off?
Yeah. Let me tell you something about Barclay Tag. He doesn't, the weather is not good to Barclay at Belmont. A few years back, 10 years ago, we had a bad storm at Belmont. And, I mean, it was just pouring down rain, and Barclay was out in the training side parking lot, and they told him, you know, that you can't go through there. The tunnel's starting to flood. The water's coming up everywhere. And next thing you know, we see Barclay walking knee-deep in water, and his Mercedes is spinning in the water.
Oh, geez.
The water's not
through.
Been kind to him at Belmont.
Yeah. Oh, that's been – I've had that happen to me when I was at Freehold Raceway. I parked my – at the time, I think it was my first Hyundai. I got a Hyundai, a little four-door, and I parked it near the winner's circle, and torrid rains came, and it started flooding, and one of the parking guys came in my office, grabbed my keys, ran back, jumped in the car, got it started up, and we saw the water coming out the tailpipe. And the car went 10 feet, and that was it. It dropped right there.
Well, the track... The track's fast at Belmont. You know, they've been working on it real good. You know, we'll see tomorrow. The heat might play a little bit in it, and the humidity, you know, might be a little a bit much. But just about all those horses that are on the list, we're down here in Florida this winter. Doug O'Neill, he come in from California, and also, and that's going to be a nice horse, that four left.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, Scott. What does in harness racing? I mean, it all depends on how the horse is feeling and stuff. And sometimes they'll just pull off the shoes, which they do a lot in Europe. They'll just pull off all the shoes and let the horse have its natural grab of the track, as opposed to putting barium or dots or something to get a better grip.
Well, what the thoroughbreds usually do is they have a shoe with an outer rim on it. It's like a turf shoe that they put on them, and that helps them to, quit sliding around in the mud, and they can grab a hold of it. Sometimes they'll bend the heels of the shoe down a little bit, or they might have a mud caulk on there, but they'll have that in the program. They have to list it in the program. There's a different type of shoe on them. But at Belmont, and I know I had some mares that I had raced up there, and I used the outer rim turf shoe, and it kept them from slipping and sliding around. But if it gets muddy at Belmont, let me tell you, it'd be like throwing sandbags on their legs when they hit the head of the stretch. That's a wicked stretch you've got to run down.
Yeah, because in harness racing, if need be, they'll scrape the track and let them race, and it'll be a harder surface for the horses. And sometimes, it can sting their feet. But instead of being a sloppy track, that track's going to be, it'll be good, and they'll still be flying on it.
Right. Well, what they do at Belmont, if it's raining, they'll seal the track. They'll keep sealing it back and forth, and they'll keep, squeegeeing as much water as they can out of it. And it does, the water does drain good at Belmont, that's for sure. But like I said, it's a lot of sand in it, and when it gets wet, it's just really tough, for a horse to get their legs through that, because it gets deep on you real quick and everything.
If the mud's flying, then we'll see the jockeys wearing eight sets of goggles.
Yeah, that you'll see. They'll have it caked all over them. But with the 10 horse field and the long stretch, I don't think you're going to see a lot of horses hooking up with each other. Because like right now, I'm watching one of the races at Belmont, and the speed's holding. So whoever comes out of the gate first, is staying right up front. Nobody's catching them. So depending on what the rain does Friday, and Saturday morning, it'll be interesting to see, what happens. But these horses that are winning at Belmont today are out in the center of the track, and that's good. So they've got
now,
the track.
Do we see any foreign horses in here?
Let's see here. I'm having a sheet in front of me. I believe if you look at four left, I don't have my sheet in front of me. But, that horse is going to be an interesting horse to watch, to see what happens with that horse. But, again, it's all the humidity. This time of year, doing what they're doing, it's going to be tough on them. And that's why, this race is so interesting, is because just about all these horses were here in Florida, and the temperature was in the 70s and 80s here, winter long. And so, I think it's the humidity and not the temperature that's going to be tough on them.
Understood that. And, of course, you have to rate everything right now that it's going to be a fast track. And, hope it stays that way, at least, for everyone that will be watching on the TV.
Right. But from the betting standpoint,
tell me,
if you watch the races all day and see how if the speed's holding, you know, how the horses, if there's any closers or, you know, any big difference in the track. And on NBC, the announcers are really good because they'll tell you what they've done to the track. You know, if they seal that, you know, if they, you know, just exactly what they're doing to it. It's going to be a big difference.
How do you rate it between Gulfstream Park and Belmont? In other words, a horse like Tis the Law, you know, he shows a 150 at a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream. Can he do the come back that strong or faster in the Belmont?
Well, I don't think he can go faster because that's pretty quick. I think it's to his liking because Barkley has horses at Palmettos and Gulfstream, and mm-hmm. the tracks are sand. And, you know, of course, you know, they call Belmont the Big Sandy. And, you know, I think it's very, very close to, you know, what Belmont is. Now, Belmont, depending, like you said, on the weather, if it rains a lot, it's going to be tough. But I think all these horses that were here this winter, you know, it's going to be to their advantage. And like I said, the way I see this race now, I think it's wide open.
Right.
I think it's wide open. I do like, you know, Tis the Law. I like Barkley Tag and Robin. They got that horse ready. They know, they've been there and they've done that. But, you know, again, this time of year, he's facing some horses that have matured a little bit and that are, you know, ready to run. And he might be in a dogfight from the get-go. And if that is, we'll see what kind of horse he is.
Okay, I agree with you. I mean, I'm looking here, and I see 5-6 horses that are all coming into Belmont off a win. And because mm-hmm. it's the first really, well, not first, but one of the biggest stake races, the Triple Crown, chances these horses are all in good shape, like you said. It could be a wide open race.
Right. Well, you know, when you look at it, these trainers say, you know, they had, even though they did back it down from a mile and a half to a mile and an eighth, you still have the Belmont track factor. You know, and you know, you can train a horse to get ready for all kinds of distances. But the track factor is the one that really figures in. I know some horses, you know, that couldn't run at Belmont to save their life, and they go out, you know, they go up to Canada and out to California and to Chicago and win easy, you know. But at Belmont, that's a long, wide stretch. And when you mm-hmm. come down that stretch, you know, it's just it takes you in. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because they've never been
well,
on
it's- If the track condition is you know, good or fast, then Tis the Wind should be an easy winner. But if it is muddy, then I'm going to look hard at Max Player, because that victory at Parks in the sloppy track, it would be similar to Belmont. And in that race, I mean, granted he laid off the pace early, but then came on and drew off by over 4 lengths. And, you know, that was a mile and 140 and 4, but I'm sure he's going to, you know, he won his next start at Aqueduct, and I think he's primed for the upset win. That's my upset player, especially if it's raining, Max Player.
Okay, there you go. Well, you know, another thing that we haven't figured into it is Steve Asmussen's horses. You know, in there, he's got that Jungle Runner, which is a nice horse. And then they have that Pneumatic in there. And, you know, sometimes the trainer gets one in there, and they'll make sure that there's a solid, you know, pace. And theoretically, you would look at, you know, a horse coming in there like Jungle Runner, you know, to he's was at 50 to 1 the other day, but he might come out and set the pace and, you know, ensure that, you know, they're getting along, you know, pretty quick. And then like Pneumatic would come, you know, up from out of nowhere, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, we don't know about that.
Sure, you know? Exactly. Although, as you say, Dematic shows a 6-furlong race where he won by a neck, but I mean the horse was literally fifth coming into the last turn, and then won by a neck. I mean, so he's got closing speed, like you said, and
yeah.
It's all a question of if a rabbit goes out early, and he can come on late. But you're right. Fanatic though is 8-1, so we'll see how the weather holds for him.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is that Max Flair was for Linda Rice. No woman's ever won a Triple Crown race.
There you
go. You know, if anybody were to do it, I would like to see her do it because she's a Belmont person. You know, she's strictly New York, and I could think nothing better, you know, to see her, you know, do that. You know, and she's got that horse ready to run. I guarantee you, that horse will be ready to run. You know, and
yeah,
I like Rosario running. And I think that, you know, it's going to be awful good. And then the press conference yesterday morning, she didn't say very much. She got a new hairdo, and I think she's getting ready to, you know, for the win, for the picture.
Well, you know what? Sometimes that can be the deciding factor, and make you look really good if the horse wins.
Yeah, all our grooms have had good clothes on this week and real professional, and you know the barn's looking good, and you know, and I think it's just, you know, one of those things that's leading up to get their picture taken, you know, on Saturday, you know, with her. So that would be good, and then, you know, like I said, that Mark Cassidy with that tap it to win. You know, he's been there and done that at Belmont. He knows what it's like. He knows how to get them ready. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. You know.
Oh, no. This horse looks like you said, he's primed. They raced him at Belmont beginning of June, and he romped, you know, he won for fun, wired the field, as we say in harness racing. But he was strong in the front end, which you said, if it's an off track or something, this horse here, you know, knows how to lead. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is the Top Fletcher has got that Farmington Road in there, and the last race he was like in the hunt, and then he just never could, you know, get into that next gear to get down the road, and I don't know if that was because, you know, he didn't train well going into the race, or if it was the fact that he's just not that good. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I think he'll play a factor in it somewhere along the line.
Well, you know, you have to give the horse credit because the two starts back raced at Oaklawn for $200,000 and finished second by just half a length. And he was actually 13th. He was 11th going into the before the top of the stretch, and he passed by six horses to get in fourth, and then finished second. So I mean, and that was on a sloppy track.
Yeah, that what race was that? The Arkansas Derby.
Oak Lawn.
I don't. Yeah.
Yes. No. Mr. Big News won.
Yeah. Well, he was in tough company out there. That Hot Springs meet this year is very, very tough meet for the horses. You know, you had Baffert and you had all those guys there. You know, it was a big thing. And, you know, there's another thing, Steve, that we haven't touched on yet, is that everybody was kind of, you know, watching Bob Baffert and his two horses, you know, where they were headed, what they were doing, where they were going, you know, and some of the trainers even admitted, you know, said they weren't going to go to Belmont because they knew Baffert was sending one or both of his horses, you know, there for the Belmont. And they had unbelievable times, and, you know, they'd been running good, and, you know, they were top Derby favorites. And then all of a sudden, they come up injured, you know, and they're not going to be in,
right.
in the hunt for
both
any
of them.
Injuries.
So anyone who was gearing up and saw both of Baffert's horses win and figured, oh my, he's going to probably send them both, and I'm not
right.
going to waste my time getting prepping my horse to go to the Belmont. Then
right.
then they find out that they've changed the distance of the race, that Baffert's horses are lame, and it's like, oh my, it's sort of like running, waking up at 3 a.m. and saying, oh my God, we got to change everything right now. And do this and enter them here, and I can just see them scurrying about saying,
exactly.
oh.
Trying to explain to their owners why, you know, and then you got to remember some of them, you know, said, well, if we don't go to Belmont, you know, we'll point towards the Bluegrass Stakes, you know, coming up here in a few weeks. And, you know, so they kind of shuffled around, and now, you know, it's like it's over and done with. You know, they got to stick to their training program to, you know, to get to the Derby and to the Preakness. And you know, it's going to be interesting, you know, because they got to come back and run another mile and an eighth in the Preakness coming up, you know, in a few weeks. And
right, when's the do we have you have the date for the Preakness?
Yeah, I think three weeks later. I'm going to look here and see. It was interesting. Everybody was talking about, the Derby. And so with it being, you know, late in the year, towards the Breeders' Cup time, that's another thing that they're trying to figure out here with the horses. How important does the Breeders' Cup come now? You know, that's the thing that you got to look at.
Well, that, and they also have to figure if the winner of the Belmont goes to the Preakness and is successful, and now it has to wait. Does it race again someplace else before the Derby?
Oh yeah. Let's see. When we come up the Belmont Saturday, and then the next one would be the Derby on September 5th, and then you have the Preakness on the 3rd of October.
That's what I wanted to get into. What does the winner of the Belmont do before the Derby?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. It's sad to say, but owners are asking themselves questions now. Do I want to have a Kentucky Derby winner that was run in, September 5th, or do I want a Breeders' Cup winner that was run in November at its regular scheduled, you know, time in November? Because you got to lay the value on it, what's going to happen. Now, granted, everybody would love to have a Derby winner, but to be honest with you, a lot of the Derby winners have not gone on to do good, you know, after they won in the normal cycle of the Triple Crown. It was really tough on them, you know, to do that. And also, there's a lot of things that are playing into it.
With the Derby, I mean, if the horse can win the Belmont and then come back and win the Derby, and then they'll sit tight for a month and then go in the Preakness.
Right, exactly. That's what they would do. They would try that. But, you know, there's a lot of big races along the way. You're looking at the Haskell, you know, that would be coming up. You're looking at the Travers at Saratoga. There's a lot of good races that are coming up.
If the toughest of the races is the Belmont, and that's going to be over with, now that's the first race. I mean, it should be all downhill from there, but
you would think, but you got to remember, it's a mile and an eighth, and it's not that old mile and a half, you know. And there's a lot of mile and an eighth races that are coming up.
They'll be in shape for that, but then the Derby also, we're talking 20 horses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know what? I tell you another thing too. We don't know how many horses might be in the Preakness either. They might load that Preakness, might get loaded up, you know. that could very well happen.
Understood, yeah. Because any horse that, you know, is going to be doing this racing is going to have this foundation underneath them. And then after the Preakness, then, you know, then all eyes will be on the Breeders' Cup.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's going to be, and the Breeders' Cup, it's Keeneland. It's at Keeneland this year. And, you know, so that makes you think, you know, hey, I might like to take you know, my horse to Keeneland, run the Bluegrass, you know, and then, you know, run another couple before the Breeders' Cup. You know, to get off of the track, because Keeneland is a tough track. It's really deep, and you know, it's tough. And I tell you, I think that the racing of the horses and the entries are pretty much in the owner's hands now, not the trainers. You know, because they're trying to figure out how they can mark their horse with the best value. And you know, it goes back to like what would you want? A Travers winner, you know, for a stallion, or a Derby winner, you know, that type of thing. The owners would have to look at a lot of things, you know, and it's going to be tough. I'd hate to be these trainers trying to get them ready, because I'll be honest with you, I don't think you're going to see too many of these horses running that are running Saturday. I don't think you're going to see them down the road too much. You know, they'll be dropping off, and you'll see a whole bunch of new shooters for the Preakness. You know,
so your prediction is that there'll be no Triple Crown winner this year.
Oh no, no, I don't think so, Steve. I just don't think so. I think that there's a lot of people out there, you know, in the barns that are, you know, saying, hey, you know, maybe we'll go
well,
for the Preakness.
Plus, so far apart. As a what could be a benefit actually with the Derby is that these horses will be a lot more seasoned going into it.
Oh,
and
exactly.
Probably, you know, they're going to know more about their horse, and these horses are going to be a lot tougher. They're 3-year-olds, but going into the Derby, unless they had a decent 2-year-old season, nobody knew what was going to happen. Or how they're going to go?
Yeah.
Now we're going to see how they are.
Right. Well, you know, it's historically with the 2-year-olds, the 2-year-old season in the thoroughbred business is really not all that. You know, it's because they're so young. You know, there's so many things that are going on, and most of your Breeders' Cup 2-year-old champions, you know, you never see them. You know, they never make it back to the, well, they might make it to the Derby, but they don't run very well, you know, and it makes it tough, you know, people don't realize that a 2-year-old, you know, racing is really tough on the thoroughbreds because they're not built for that early. And,
well, that's why you only see in most cases 3 to 5 starts max as 2-year-old, and then they're out in the field.
Right. Now, when I was first started in the business and was at the track back in the early 80s, one of the things that disappointed me very much with Dewey Smith is that, you know, we had some nice 2-year-olds coming along, won the Jockey Club and you know, a couple other stake races, and then they were turned out. You know, and I said, oh, my goodness. I said, you know, they're turned out. You go into the farm. And he said, yeah, and back in the day, you didn't see these horses racing a lot because the money, you know, you had to be real careful. You know, you do a prep race for the, you know, for the Arkansas Derby and Gopher Red or the Louisiana Derby, and, you know, or Bluegrass or Keeneland. And, you know, you just didn't race them very much. But nowadays, these horses are, you know, under such a training schedule to win. You know, that you don't know what's going to happen. You know, so
you're right.
I think now it's going to be interesting to see who wins the Derby this year. And, you know, how many horses they have and, you know, where they're going with. You know, it's September 5th. Then you got, you know, a month later you got the Preakness. And then a month later you got the Breeders' Cup. You know, so
now the Breeders' Cup is in late November.
No, it's in November. It's at the end of October, November.
Okay.
Third,
so it's
November,
just a natural
fourth.
Flow for any horses, you know.
Right, right. So
Derby,
ideally
Preakness,
what you want to do is you want to treat the Derby and the Preakness and the Breeders' Cup like the Triple Crown. And I think that's what a lot of owners and trainers are doing right now. And that would put a huge, huge value on a horse, even if you don't win the Belmont, you know, or if you don't even run in the Belmont. You know, that would be your Triple Crown, would be the Derby, the Preakness, and then the Breeders' Cup.
Understood.
You know,
I mean,
but they said
the same thing.
With the Breeders' Cup now, you got to remember that the Classic is for 3-year-olds and up.
Correct.
So by the time you get to the fall and you start getting all the big races, you're looking at 3-year-olds and up. So, you know, you got to have a seasoned horse, you know, that's going to jump in there with horses that have been racing for 2, 3, 4 years.
I was going to say, it's the same in harness racing. When you get down to, you have our Breeders' Crown where you race in your, let's say, 3-year-old division. But then the TVG series, if you're the 3-year-old pacing colt that wins, you can go and race against the older horses because by that time it's late November and, or mid November and, you're either going to go to stud or you want to try to go out with a bang by beating the older horses.
Right. But, you know, that's what's going to make it interesting here, you know, for the 3-year-olds right now in all divisions, you know, of the thoroughbred business, is you got to place value on your horse. And a lot of people don't understand that in order to have a good stallion, he has to be proven. You know, was he a precocious 2-year-old? You know, how was he as a 3-year-old? How was he as an older horse? You know, that type of thing. Now, where did he run when he was a 3-year-old? It's going to be interesting to see because you go back and you pick out, did the horse do good at you know, at 6 or 7 furlongs? How did he do, you know, on 1 1/8, 1 1/4? And how did he do it on a route of ground? And it's going to be interesting, you know, to see what happens on Saturday. But like I said, my thinking is that it could be any one of these guys can pop up there and, you know, and get it. You know, it's going to be a jockey's race, that's for sure, at 1 1/8. It's going to be. They've got the Tappet to win is 6-1. They're just putting up the new odds. Tis the Law, 6-5.
6-5.
You might be on. Yeah.
Well, we have 6 minutes left to the show. It's time time to put the pedal to the metal here, Mr. Miller, and tell us who's your top pick.
Well, okay. I tell you what,
what's your
I'm
trifecta?
Sitting here and just showing. On our website, they just showed our buddy here, Tis the Law, run, and he did it real easy. I think he's going to be right at the wire with him, but I'm telling you, I'm looking at Dr. Post for Fletcher. I think Todd has got him around, you know, to come around. And I just think he's going to be the one to get there. Who do you
wow.
like?
Well, I think Tis the Law is overwhelmingly the best. And if not, then my second choice would be Tappet to win. And then I would probably put in Max Player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Max Player. Yeah, you might be right there. I agree with you.
Well, I'm looking, you know, I'm looking to hit the trifecta exact the box here.
There you go. Well, again, like you said, it's the weather. You know, we got to see how the weather's going to be. And the last horse that I saw Todd have, and the reason I like Dr. Post is he reminds me of Always Dreaming. Always Dreaming, he was good, you know, but he didn't have, when he won, he didn't have that, you know, like you know, like that solid, like, oh, yeah, I'm the best. You know, he got there. He did what he had to do. And right. Then when it came time to the Derby, you know, that Joker, he just ran off like there was no tomorrow, you know, and was good. So, and that's what Dr. Post reminds me of, you know, is always dreaming. And, but, tis the law, you might be right, but you some money there, Steve.
Oh, boy. How much does the winner get?
It's a million. It's like $625,000, I'm thinking, you know, something like
that. Oh, that's all?
Yeah,
that's
all.
That pays for a little bit of feed and a couple nights of hard partying.
Yeah, well, you got that right. And, you know, the interesting part about that is that money that they're getting is going to be spent very wisely, I think. And I think that they might, if Tinsel wins the Belmont, I think that the owners go into the breeding, you know, shed mode. I think they start, you know, going to manicure that horse to get him right and ready for the breeding shed. And that's a whole new ballgame then. Because what they want to do with him is they probably want to hit him towards, like, the Travers and a mile and a quarter. You know, and that's what they would want to look at. And then they'd try to get him, you know, to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. And if he did that, you know, the value from his stud would be unbelievable.
So you skip the Derby.
Well, it'll be in a mile and a quarter. So, you mm-hmm. know, I think Barkley would go to the Derby with him. You know, I think that would be, you know, the logical next move for him, you know, would be to go to the Derby and then, you know, do that.
Theoretically, I mean, the horse would only make the starts in the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup. And call it a season.
Right, exactly. But, you know, the thing of it is that, see, the Travers will be right before the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, that's going to play a big part in it, to see who goes to the Travers and who goes to the Derby.
I understand. And, so maybe he makes a trip to the Travers where it's going to be easier because 20 other top horses are all going for the Derby. He wins the Travers, then comes back for the Preakness and the Breeders' Cup, and he's horse of the year.
Exactly. You got that
well,
right.
I guess the only thing we have to do, we have to just wait for Saturday afternoon and see how it plays out.
You got that right. Well, Steve, you know, we got to start talking a little more about these harness races that are coming up because they had an awful lot of qualifiers, you know. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, about all the qualifiers. And
you got
it. Everybody's doing. And, I think everything's going good for us, so. I'd like for everybody to get to our website and see, you know, like we've got live racing from Royal Ascot, Belmont, Churchill on there now. And that's all because of Fox Sports 1, you know, and everything. So we got that.
Excellent. Good show, Scott.
See it. Sure is, buddy. What you got for us next week real quick?
Well, we're going to have more stake racing action. The four-year-olds will be going again in the graduate this time for the Pacers. Chardonnay, hopefully we'll see her make her comeback start. Could be at the Meadowlands. I don't think it'll be at Harrington, or it could be at Chester, depending on the horse types they get.
Well, Steve, we had a great show today. I'm watching the second race at Belmont here. They're finished up, and speed is holding. So you might be right on the money, Steve. Speed and holding.
We'll see.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, BBS.
Yep.
You know, we'll see you all next week.